Hello, and welcome to our Veterans Ascend podcast. Today, we are honored to speak with Lisa Herring. Lisa is the mom of a combat veteran and founder of Side by Side Solutions, LLC. She is a total rock star when it comes to Social Security benefits and claims. She took personal experience and years of working for the Social Security Administration to start her company and help others. Side by Side Solutions, LLC works to empower veterans to navigate the complex Social Security disability process in a way that increases their chances of approval and minimizes their chances of denial. They give veterans a specific step-by-step plan of action for their claim and show them how to make sure that the decision maker has everything they need. Lisa is very passionate about our military, veterans, and first responders. She's made it her life's work to help those who do so much for our communities. We are privileged to speak with Lisa today, hear her story as the mom of a combat veteran, and get her insights on navigating the complex Social Security disability process. Lisa, thank you so much for your time today. I'm honored to have you on. We've met several times, and you're just really a great person. So tell us briefly about your son in the Marine Corps, what it was like to be a mom with a child serving in combat, and what do you wish people would know about the sacrifices military families make?
Hi, Robin. Just such a pleasure to be on your show today. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me. So I'm the mother of four children, and my son, Vince, my oldest, went into the Marine Corps at 17 years old. So he went in quite young. He went into the infantry. He served with 1st Battalion, 8th Marines, a weapons company. His MOS was 0331, which, just to translate for those folks that don't know, he was a machine gunner. So he was actually the guy that sat in the turret, you know, the top of the Humvee. So kind of a target, if you will, you know, sitting right up there with the 50 cal machine gun. So that was his job in the Marine Corps. He went in 2005. He got out in 2009. He deployed to Iraq in 2007. And in 2006, he was actually involved in the evacuation of folks in Beirut. But in 2007, he was in Iraq. So he experienced combat at a very young age. I guess I would say, you know, first of all, as a mom, immensely proud of him and his service. And I have other military family members as well, quite a few Navy folks in my family, and so super proud of him. But that's, you know, that's quite young to go. And of course, with him being deployed, back in those days, we didn't have as much communication, I think, as parents do with their sons and daughters that are deployed now. So when he deployed, I didn't have any communication with him other than written letters that I would occasionally get. So to be perfectly honest, I worried, you know, I basically worried for 4 years is what I did when he was in the service. And I would say this too, you know, it changes them. He went away a boy and he came back a man. And his training trained him into a particular kind of mindset. His war experiences affected him profoundly. And I would say, you know, you don't get the same person back that left. It's very challenging, particularly when they go to war.
Sure.
So I think what people don't realize is they may see and have some understanding of the sacrifices of the veterans themselves, particularly if a veteran has some kind of visible injury, let's say. But I don't think that they understand the ripple effect for the families. And everyone is affected.
Absolutely.
In the family. Right. Everyone serves in some sense along with the person in the military. And afterwards, everyone feels the effects of that. And sometimes those effects are really significant.
Sure. Yeah, so a couple of things. Well, thank you for sharing that story. I know that there could be some difficult times and all that. My nephew is currently serving active duty Marine, and he is over in the Middle East. He was supposed to come home in April, and he's still there until June, hopefully no later than that. And there's not a day that goes by. And he's my nephew. He's my godson as well. But he's only my nephew. there's not a day that doesn't go by I don't think about him and worry about right. him over there. But you're right, back then when your son served, the communication levels were, you know, like you said, non-existent pretty much. Now at least I can get a text from my nephew every once in a while. I get a call from him every once in a while, you know, so I can still have that touch point. I will share with you, when I served in the Navy, I went to Iceland for 2 years, and this was 80 to 82. No email, no internet, no cell phones, no nothing. We got to call home almost once a month, maybe once every other month on the, you know, the satellite phones or the landlines in the comm center. And it's where I learned how important it is to say, "I love you," as the last thing somebody hears me say. Because yes. there were several times when the phone would cut off unexpectedly and I didn't get to talk to them again for 2 months. And just, you know, it's so important. So, and you're right, the family serves. I don't think I realized how much my family missed me. I had the military community around me. I had my military family, you know, I was doing my job. All these things kept me busy. But the family at home worried about me every day. So thank you. Right. Thank you for your service. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that. So kind of segue into that. I'm probably guessing I know the answer to this, but let's tell our listeners, what led you to start Side-by-Side Solutions and what's the mission? Who do you serve and why is your service different?
Okay, well, it's a little bit of a dual answer maybe as to why I started it. So first and foremost, you know, I've got that basis of the fact that I just care very much for our military and veteran community. I consider them family. And that just, you know, to me, that goes without saying, but that's the basis, probably the basis of it. But in addition to that, veterans really were the people that saved my life. And you're going to say, well, what do you mean by that? I started working for Social Security in 2009, and almost immediately, within less than 2 months after I started, I had a terrible accident. So I was hit and dragged by a car and almost killed.
There's a backstory
to that that I probably don't need to go into at this point that was very complicated. But I was obviously out of work for a bit, but I'm very stubborn and I wanted to keep my job, and against my doctor's orders, so to speak, I went back to work. And, you know, fortunately, the government is somewhat responsive when you say, hey, I need some reasonable accommodation here. So they tried to accommodate me. But I had this accident. I did not initially go for mental health treatment, which I should have, but I didn't. I did get diagnosed with a TBI, but ended up being so busy having other surgeries for physical issues. And I had a neurologist I didn't really like who wasn't helpful, that my TBI really went untreated as well.
Wow.
In 2010, I had another accident, this time in a car. I stopped at a light and this car just came, and it was a blizzard up north, and he just smashed into me. So that kind of set me aback a bit as well. Finally, in 2011, I did get mental health treatment and got a formal diagnosis of PTSD from that accident. So I started getting some treatment and so forth, but I was not doing well from a mental health standpoint. You know, I would go to work and end up in the bathroom just kind of, you know, shaking and crying and trying to keep myself together so that I could do my job. And it became, you know, progressively more difficult. And I really had, at that point, very little understanding of what had happened, you know, why I was feeling that way. And I didn't really know much about PTSD. I'd heard the term, but I didn't really know much about it. So at that point, I was desperately kind of trying to feel better. Like, how could I make myself feel better? So a couple of things happened. One, I happened to make a connection over Facebook, can't even remember exactly how, with a Marine Corps veteran that at the time was living in Baltimore. So I was living in New Jersey. He was living in Baltimore. And he had been approached. He was a Pat Tillman scholar, and he had been approached by the Pat Tillman organization to do a one-year service project in one of the worst neighborhoods in Baltimore. And he and some buddies of his agreed to do that. And they went into this community and did things like, you know, literally clean it up, paint murals, create playgrounds, interact with the community to try to help it. So this was an initiative on the part of the Pat Tillman Foundation. So I connected with him, and he just, you know, he was a Marine. He was a young guy. It's like reminding me of my son a bit, right? And so I ended up with a situation where he messaged me and said, hey, listen, I'd like to invite you, me and a bunch of my friends that are veterans, we're going to be in South Jersey, and they are going to be doing a performance called The Telling Project. So Robin, I don't know if you've heard of The Telling Project, but basically they have different casts of folks that are veterans, military family members, could even be active duty, maybe, I'm not sure, who perform mostly for civilians so that civilians can understand the military and veteran experience. So it's a way of teaching civilians and helping civilians understand that experience. So the particular cast from Baltimore was going to be performing in South Jersey at one of the colleges there. And this Marine who was from Baltimore invited me to drive down and see the performance. So I drove down to see the performance, and he was so incredibly welcoming. Come sit next to me and figure at this point, I'm not doing too well from a mental health standpoint. You know, I'm just really not doing too well. So he invites me to come and sit by him. I watched this performance. It was life-changing for me. It was just incredible to sit and learn and understand, and particularly because I'd had a son in the military who didn't really talk to me about his experience. So afterwards, I ended up meeting the cast. I'm friends with all of them to this day, and they have been fantastic to me over the years. But I also ended up going down to Baltimore. So crazy me, I'm driving down to Baltimore. I'm hanging out with all of these veterans. I'm helping them pick up trash in this terrible neighborhood in Baltimore. And, you know, my friends are saying to me, what are you doing down there? And all I could say is, well, I'm picking up trash in Baltimore. But what I was really doing was feeling accepted and understood.
Sure.
So it was veterans that helped me to feel like I wasn't nuts, you know, that helped me to feel like what I was experiencing was something that maybe a lot of them had experienced, as far as the cause was different, the root cause was different, but what I was experiencing was very understandable to them.
Sure.
So in many ways, because they accepted me and because I got involved in that, subsequently I got involved with Team Rubicon, I started to feel like I really had maybe some kind of purpose, right? Maybe I've got something to offer people rather than, okay, I'm just messed up over here, right?
Right.
So that really changed my life. They ended up forming a nonprofit called the Sixth Branch that still exists in Baltimore to this day. They're still doing good work. Rich is no longer in charge of that, that Marine that I was talking about, but they still do a lot of good work. But it was really being in that community that helped me to survive that period of time and feel better. So anyway, so a combination of, you know, just really caring about veterans to begin with, and then, of course, my experience with them. And I also ended up involved in New Jersey in an organization that provided equine-assisted psychotherapy to veterans. And specifically, there's a VA hospital up there, and we were providing that service to them. They would come out on a van from the PTSD inpatient unit, and I was able, because they allowed me to, I was able to actually watch a lot of that. And I gained a lot just even watching them go through that therapy. So I did that for about 6 years too. And of course, that just made me feel that much more like these are people that, you know, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them are really suffering, and I can relate to a lot of this. And these are people that I want to serve. so kind of a combination of things. So, but I ended up with another accident.
Oh, my goodness. Not my fault.
Yeah, in 2013, I had another accident. It was a fall at work and wet floor situation. And I still stayed working until late in 2014. And I just finally found myself in this situation where I could no longer do the full duties of my job. And I had to disable, retire, and I had to file for Social Security disability. So guess what? I've had to do it myself. And so I understand the process from both sides, right? So you asked me why my service is different. I would say, you know, different from, let's say, probably what people are looking at out there on the internet is attorneys, right? So number one, I care. Like I said, I care very deeply about everybody that I help. I can help anybody with SSDI, but my focus and my passion is really veterans. In addition to that, first responders were the people that came to the scene of the accident and initially saved my life, you know? And there are people who also, many of them struggle with PTSD as well. So, and then of course, military spouses, because we know that a lot of them are just badasses, right?
Right.
And yeah. they suffer right along with the veterans in many cases. So number two, I can relate to my clients. I mean, a lot of my clients have very similar issues to what I have. And because I had to go through the process, I feel like I'm talking to myself, right? Sometimes. So there's that. And, you know, I'm different in the sense that, in terms of what I actually have to offer, in that I have inside information. So I worked at the Social Security Administration. One of the workloads that I had was that I was the only person in my office who processed all of the denials. So I didn't make denial decisions. That's not done by Social Security. That's actually done by Disability Determination Services, which is housed typically at your State Department of Labor. So they're the ones that make the decision. But Social Security has the rules. They help people file the claims and they sort of manage the claims. So I had to process all the denials in my office. So you're talking thousands over time, you know, thousands upon thousands of denials.
Wow.
And one of the things that I got very curious about, because I'm one of those people, things need to make sense to me, right? So I started looking at some of these claims and I'm seeing veterans who maybe have 100% disability rating at the VA. And they qualify for expedited claim processing with Social Security, which sounds good, but really isn't, unless you have a very well-prepared claim. And I'm seeing so many of these people get denied. And I'm like, what is going on, right?
Wow.
And also, maybe some people that I had interviewed where it was so incredibly obvious to me that there's no way this person can work. And of course, that's the basis of Social Security disability is inability to work, right?
Right.
So I'm thinking, why are these people getting denied? Something's going on here. And I got curious and I got nosy and I started looking at these claims. And I started discovering that there were ways in which the system broke down that people didn't realize, you wouldn't know unless you were looking. And also that these breakdowns were avoidable. In many cases, it was something that would be fixable or avoidable. And I thought, oh my gosh, these denials do not need to be happening, many of them, right? So after I left Social Security and I started helping people because, okay, I want to feel like a not useless person. I want to feel like a useful person. And I had been feeling useless after I lost my job. I said, you know what? Let me get educated on the other side of things. The other side meaning disability determination services, meaning what goes on over there? How do they make that decision? Exactly how does that work? So I got educated on that side of things as well. So I really have a good, solid, holistic picture on how it all works. And I have the ability to teach people that, right? Just want to say something about lawyers here, and this is always a touchy subject. So, you know, my father is a lawyer. I don't want people to think that I hate lawyers because I don't. I've hired lawyers, you know, in my life. the unfortunate thing when it comes to Social Security disability, and it's not the lawyer's fault, is that the way that the system is set up is that lawyers get paid from retroactive benefits. So on the plus side, an individual doesn't have to lay out any money up front, right? But on the negative side of it, they can, first of all, they can get up to $6,000, which is a pretty sizable chunk of money. And they, by the very nature of the way that it's set up, they have no incentive in many cases to get the claim approved. It works much better for them if the person is denied a few times.
Sure.
Because then that retroactive amount builds up to the point where they can get their full fee, which is $6,000. So they're limited to 25% of the retro with a cap of $6,000.
Wow.
So by the very nature of it, you know, it's just the way that it's set up. Like I said, it's not their fault. It's just the very nature of it is that, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And there are some people that won't get retroactive benefits. And for those people, an attorney wouldn't even look at them twice.
Wow.
So those, it's just, and I don't do it that way at all. I've been offered to come work for attorneys that do SSDI. I said, no, to me, it's a conflict of interest. It's unethical. I won't do it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that they're bad people. It's just the way that it's set up because I want my people to get approved ASAP, right?
Yes, exactly.
I'm disabled myself. I don't want to fool around. I wanted to, you know, not have to appeal and all of that. So hopefully that answered those questions that you asked me.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. That the perspective that you have obviously brings a great insight to the whole process and the compassion for what somebody's going through when they're filing for disability. You know, these people are hurt. They're kind of probably in somewhat of a despair situation, and to be denied, you know, the claims, it's heartbreaking. So thank you for all that you're doing.
I would actually be afraid when I was there doing that workload. I would think to myself, what if my sending out this denial letter is the thing that makes someone give up?
Absolutely.
You know, what if this is the thing? What if this is the thing that tips them over into suicide? It was a very, very challenging workload to have to do. I hated it at the time. I'm glad something good came out of it. And you know, you're a veteran, right? So you have pride. You've been trained into a mindset that tells you not to talk about when something is going on with you from a physical point or a mental health standpoint, because when you were in the military, you had to be deployable at all times. It sometimes is very challenging for veterans to get to the point where they will admit that they need to file for this benefit. And if they think that it means that they're quitting or giving up, which I explained to them, it does not mean that,
right.
Then it's very hard for them to go get the benefits that they really should get that will make their life better, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we don't ask for help easily because we're trained
right.
to figure it out. We're trained to get it done, so... Yeah, absolutely. Well, good. So I know you probably got a ton of things you could tell us about the process and the best things to get through, but just give us the top three things that people should know to successfully navigate and obtain their SSDI. And what are the biggest hurdles or mistakes people make when submitting a claim?
Okay, so I would say number one, you can be really disabled. You can have great evidence. Right? And you can still get denied because, as I said before, there are places where the system breaks down. So I understand where those places are. I teach people how to navigate that. But you can't assume that because you are very disabled and because, you know, you've got good records at the VA, let's say, that you're going to be approved. So I would say that's number one. Number two, you've got to understand what it means to be considered disabled under Social Security rules because they're different from the VA. Hmm. Even conditions, right? So some conditions that the VA would consider possibly service-connected disabling are not even considered disabling by Social Security. So just to give you two examples, until 2017, PTSD was not considered a disabling condition by Social Security.
Wow.
So when I filed, I obviously told them, sorry, it's thundering here, if you can hear that. I told them I had PTSD, but they didn't give it to me for PTSD. They had to call it mood disorder or something like that, because PTSD was not actually a disabling condition. It is now, I'm happy to say, it is now, but it wasn't prior to 2017. Wow. Another example would be sleep apnea, right? So many veterans are rated for sleep apnea. And oh, by the way, Social Security is all or nothing. You're either disabled or you're not. There's no percentages. Some people don't know that. So,
okay.
But sleep apnea, for example, you can get a rating at the VA for sleep apnea. Well, guess what? Sleep apnea is not listed as a disabling condition for Social Security. Now, I have some ways to argue it anyway, which I teach people, but in and of itself, it's not listed as a disabling condition. So, okay. You know, you got to understand that there's a difference with that. Also, people tend to be very focused on what they're rated for. At Social Security, any condition that you have that impacts your ability to work is going to be important. And as we all know, sometimes you don't get rated for something that's pretty significant, right? So
right.
I always tell my Social Security people, oh my gosh, it's a big thunderstorm.
Wow.
Yeah, like thunder, lightning, excuse me. No control over that. I always tell people everything and the kitchen sink that affects your ability to work, it's important to talk about that when you're filing for your Social Security disability claim. And then third, I would say of important things to know, you are going to have to adjust your military mindset. Because if you go into the Social Security disability process with your mindset that tells you to suck it up, drive on, don't talk about this, put on your good face, you're going to give a false impression of how much you're suffering and how your disabilities interfere with your ability to work.
Yes.
So I have a long conversation with my people about that. And I tell them, look, keep the part of your military mindset that says to you that you need to complete the mission. I don't want you to give up if you get denied. I want you to keep pushing until you get your benefits. But the rest of it, you're going to have to park at the curb, because you're going to do yourself in this process if you keep that military, you know, bearing demeanor, suck it up, drive on attitude. So probably that would be the top three things I would say. Biggest mistake. Number one, taking a hands-off attitude and not doing everything you can to educate yourself, ask for professional help, and advocate for yourself. You know, I've seen many veterans and other folks too who file for disability, just basically put it out there on Facebook. Hey, you know, everybody, positive thoughts. I filed for disability. I'm crossing my fingers. And that's it. That's all they do. No, no, no. There is so much more that you can do for yourself. And it's empowering when you get a benefit that you know that you work for.
Right.
You know, you did everything you could do for yourself. So I teach people how to, you know, get themselves empowered and do what they need to do to get their benefits. Second biggest mistake, giving up when you get denied. Don't do that. People sometimes get denied and then they prevail. You know, they get that back money from when they first filed. So don't give up. Number three, okay, somebody might get mad. Listening to the chatter on the internet. Everybody's situation and experiences are unique, and there is so much bad information out there about Social Security disability, like flat out wrong information in veterans groups. I've seen it. And I'm not the SSDI police, right? So I'm not going to go in and correct everybody. That's just not what I want to be doing. So I want to offer good, solid, real, true information, and hopefully people find it. But, you know, veterans get told that they can't file when they really can. They get told they have to have a lawyer. No, you do not. You absolutely can get this benefit without a lawyer. Now, that being said, again, you know, apologies to lawyers. You certainly have the right to hire a lawyer if you want to, but you should fully understand what they're going to do for you and what they're not going to do for you.
Right.
So, you know, there's that. So I would say, yeah, those are the three biggest mistakes.
That's awesome. So, you know, you, as you were talking, it reminded me a bit about, for veterans as well, filing for their VA disability. There's a lot of similarities to what you're saying in the fact that don't give up when you get that first denial, because you're likely going to get a denial first anyway, and keep charging. But also, when you go to represent what your claims are, don't have the suck it up mentality and just say, you know, oh, everything, you know, I'm great, but I have these issues, you know, I can still, you know, these, because that's what happens. Veterans go into these interviews or these, you know, the documentation of it, and they want to appear strong and fearless, and that hurts them when they're trying to make a claim in this regard. So great advice. So when should someone apply for SSDI? Can you still work after being granted SSDI? And how long can a person be on SSDI?
Okay. So I'm going to give you several different scenarios, right? Because people have different things that are going on with them. So first of all, you could apply the day after you stop working. Okay. I see a lot out there, people say you have to wait, you know, 3 months or 6 months, you have to wait a year. Nope, absolutely not. You can file the day after you stop working, okay? You could apply when you're still working, but your work has been reduced because you're disabled. Your work has been reduced under a particular threshold. So without going into big detail, there's something called substantial gainful activity. It's a dollar amount. This year, that dollar amount is $1,260 a month gross wages, okay? So if someone is working under that threshold in every month while their claim is pending, right, they're under that amount, they can still file for disability because their work is being so restricted. So you don't have to completely stop working, although, frankly, I think it's a better claim if you're not working at all. But, you know, sometimes somebody needs to eat. So your work is limited by the fact that you're disabled. You can't make, literally can't make more money than that. You still could file, okay? So it would be the point where your work got reduced. You can apply when you're still in the military and getting paid under the following circumstance. You're in something like a warrior transition unit, wounded warrior battalion, something like that, where they're paying you, you're continuing to get your military pay, but you're not actually working. And Social Security would need documentation of that, you know, something from your supervisor saying, hey, you know, this person is not doing their job. They are basically coming, checking in every day, and there's really, we're not having them do anything because they're medically getting out of the military, okay? So I do have some clients that are, you know, that came to me from a warrior transition unit in Kings Bay. I guess it's Kings Bay. I have somebody that refers some people over to me. So they're active duty, getting paid. They're over that threshold amount, but they're not actually working. So for those people, yes, they can file. And also, you can file years later. So if anybody has any question who's listening about, well, listen, I haven't worked in 8 years. Can I still file? My suggestion is going to be reach out to me. That's not a consultation. I'm not going to charge you any money. Just reach out to me via email. I'll discuss with you what your particular scenario is. Chances are good in many, many cases, you can still file. It's a little trickier, but you can still file. Some people won't be able to, but most people will. Okay. You asked me about working after Social Security. The answer is a resounding yes, you can. So, if you, without, again, going into tremendous detail on this, Social Security has a very fair and very reasonable process where they don't yank your benefits away from you, and they let you basically try to go back to work for an extended period of time where you kind of see if you can sustain that work, okay? So maybe it's going to be regular work, maybe it's going to be entrepreneurship and you start your own company so you can accommodate your own disabilities. That's essentially what I'm doing. So I'm still getting my Social Security disability check. I'm just not making enough money yet to be booted off, so to speak, okay? So I'm going through that process. I know exactly what that process is. I like to tell people when I do a consultation with them, I say, look, I'm going to talk to you about the future. You don't have to worry about the future right now, but I want to just plant this in your brain. In case you think your life is over and this means you'll never work again, I'm going to tell you that's not true. Okay. If you want to, you can try to go back to work, and they will not just, you know, like I said, they won't yank your benefits away from you. They'll give you the opportunity to see if you can sustain doing that. And this is where quite possibly an organization like Veterans Ascend comes in, right? You can help people get back to work, not just folks that are transitioning right out of the military, but maybe somebody who's been on disability, who wants to try to go back to work. And, you know, this is great. This is absolutely wonderful that you exist for that very reason. And I like to refer folks over to organizations like yours and say, look, when you're ready, you know, here's help for you to get back into the workforce. So I like to think of Social Security disability as like a reset, right? It's a military term, reset. Mm-hmm. So basically, when you file for disability, all you're telling them is my disabilities are significant enough that I expect to be, or I already have been, out of work for a minimum of a year. You're not necessarily telling them you're going to be disabled for the rest of your life. Now, some people will be, and some people won't go back to work. But a lot of people do end up going back to work on some level. Now, there is a level of work, and again, without going into big detail about it, but I do provide this information when I consult with people. There is a level of work that you could indefinitely do. It's low, but that you could indefinitely do while you're on Social Security disability and just keep your check, right? So you can get Social Security disability essentially for the rest of your life. It's just that if you turn your full retirement age, whatever that might be, you know, 66, 67, depending on what year you were born, at that point, if you're still on Social Security disability, you get a letter from Social Security that says, we no longer consider you disabled, we consider you retired. Nothing changes with your money, you know, that stays the same, it's just what they call you. Because nobody can file for disability once they reach their full retirement age. So once you reach that age, they're just going to call you retired. So some people will stay on it and some people will come off of it as they'll go back to work.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for your service as a mom of a combat veteran. And thank you for your passion to help military veterans and first responders. We really appreciate it. And it truly comes through. I know you personally, so I've witnessed the caring. So I can attest to how much you care about what you do and what that really comes through to the veterans that you help. So we appreciate you sharing these great insights today. Very, very helpful to our listeners. And we wish you much continued success. I know you got some great things coming up. So we'll look forward to hearing about that in future episodes, possibly. So listeners, for more information on Side by Side Solutions, please email Lisa at sidebysidesolutionsllc@gmail.com. Again, that's sidebysidesolutionsllc@gmail.com. She'll give you all kinds of information and point you to the right resources that you need. So, and for more information on Veterans Ascend or to sign up today, please visit our website at veteransascend.com. Lisa, thank you again. Thank you, listeners. Everyone, stay safe out there.